right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, August 21st, 2015. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV, happy Friday, everybody. It is 65 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. Sorry about the 30 seconds of quiet. I don't know. It seems like Fridays and Mondays don't seem to be too good here for my computers on Mondays and my microphone on Fridays. I think it might be the way I grab it and pull it down to start the show. There's the USB cable that goes into the back of the mic, and I think I might bump it or something and pull it out. I had to reset it a couple times. So anyway, happy Friday, everyone. We made it. This was, again, it's like every week just gets a little bit harder than the one before it. Summer vacation is just about over, about 2 weeks left, and I can definitely feel that I've been through the ringer. I'm about ready to take a vacation and put my nose to the grindstone, the vacation from the vacation, and be able to be sitting in my seat nonstop. So I can actually do something without having to stop 35 times. And then each time I restart, I have to start all over again. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, Project BioShield equals unapproved vaccines during emergency. And yes, we talked about Project BioShield for the last 2 days. The show before yesterday from Wednesday was titled Project BioShield, DOD, CDC, and Big Pharma Collusion. And if you missed either of those shows, I highly recommend you go back and listen to them and hit the descriptions of both shows on YouTube and start reading through some of the documentation that I referenced and that I spoke about, because it's a pretty damn frightening thing. Project BioShield originated back in 2004 as part of the Bush regime. And pretty much it gave the pharmaceutical companies full carte blanche to not only create untested vaccines that are sitting awaiting human trials, but oh, because of the ethics, they were never tested on humans. But the United States government set aside and was obligated, and hey, we renewed this in 2014, so we're still obligated to purchase bazillions of dollars of these vaccinations in the name of quote-unquote national security and keep them on hand. And in the case of an actual emergency, they will be allowed to pull out the stockpiles and to inject you, me, and my kids, one and only, and maybe even my cats, to help protect us against the, who knows, the bioterror that awaits us. And in the meantime, they'll be taking some nice, neat notes and making certain that they can prove 100% efficiency like they did in that Ebola vaccine. If you remember, just recently I saw a story. We had the manufactured Ebola pandemic. It was horrible. Oh, my God. There were people here in America with Ebola. And you know why there were people here with Ebola in America? Because we let them in. We didn't scan them at the airport. We let them fly from the countries that were just percolating everywhere, like Africa. Continent. Actually, Africa is not a country. Africa is a continent loaded with countries. I don't remember which country that Duncan was from, but he was from some African nation. Flew to Texas. And then, oh, lo and behold, he'd been in contact with all these different people. And, I mean, they put the fear in everyone's hearts. It was going to be Ebola. Remember, it was the fear of measles just before that. Johnny, of course, ruining everybody's Disney World vacation. And then we were shown images of how awful. Was it Ebola? No, wait. I don't remember if Ebola. I keep forgetting if it. It's like all these pandemics just bleed together. I don't remember if Ebola was first or measles was first. I think measles was first because we had to get everybody scared. We had to get them fighting and wanting vaccines. Because remember, in 2009, we had the swine flu pandemic, and we heard Wolfgang Woldard yesterday in an interview, and we talked about him the day before. He's the head of the European, oh, I don't think I even have Wolfgang's thing up anymore. He was the head of some European vaccine or medical agency, and he had actually come right out and had said that he believed that the 2009 swine flu, quote-unquote, pandemic was orchestrated and collaborated on between the World Health Organization and the large global vaccine manufacturers to do what? Oh, to sell vaccines. And I'll tell you, I've talked about that for a long time. I also talked about, and I still can't find reference to this, but I paid attention so very clearly when it was happening in 2009. When Obama declared a state of emergency over swine flu in 2009, and, you know, he's like, oh, we don't have enough drugs. We don't have enough flu vaccine to treat this anymore. Oh, my God. We need to open the floodgates to the European vaccine that is untested here in the United States, loaded with what? Oh, squalene. Yes. And bring that in. Fast track it. And make sure that we have enough vaccine for all of our citizens. Well, now reading Project BioShield, that absolutely 100% makes sense. Squalene had never been approved in the United States before 2009. Now, what I don't know, and this is something that somebody wants to be industrious out there, they could go do a little bit of research and let me know what they find out. But once a substance, such as squalene, which is an adjuvant, it's the new fangled adjuvant, and there's, oh, I mean, don't even worry about adjuvants anymore. We have RNA and RNAi and mRNA and nanotech and virus-like particles. So these are going to be the things now that are stimulating your immune system. It's not going to be old school aluminum anymore. Or newfangled squalene back from the first Gulf War with the anthrax vaccine. No, not that anymore. Now it's going to be flipping switches on and off and being able to coax your immune system into doing what they want it to do. But what I need to find out, and I do not know this answer, is once the floodgates have been opened and they've declared a state of emergency and they've allowed in vaccinations that were not approved to be utilized on people in this country to then be used on this on people in this country because of that emergency, does that then give the pharmaceutical companies carte blanche after the fact to now forever use squalene? Was that a rubber stamp for squalene in vaccinations in the United States? And I do not know. But what's interesting, and the reason why I wanted to find out, because we ran across an article 2 days ago that had stated that they'd never used that vaccine from the UK here in the United States. Well, I say that's a lie. I distinctly remember them opening the floodgates during the state of emergency to that European vaccine. 100%. I have a... I mean, I might not remember names, but I actually am pretty good at remembering events. And I absolutely 100% remember that dot because I've been squawking about that for the last 5 or 6 years. And the reason why vaccines for me has always kind of been that Achilles heel, told the story many years ago, but back in the, oh God, it must have been the early 90s. My beloved cat, my best little buddy, it was me and my cat lived together. And he ended up with bone cancer in his back leg, sarcoma. And when I took him to the vet, I was very lucky. My vet had been a student at Cornell University, which is one of the nation's leading veterinary schools. And she was still doing research, which makes me wonder now, because I wonder if they were doing research on the animals you brought into the vet. But she was still doing research and working very closely with the university. And, I mean, the cat was just the absolute vision of health. You've never seen anything like it. Absolute black, beautiful, shiny, like a puma with these glowing orange eyes. He was only about a year and a half old. And, I mean, he was a commercial for Iams cat food. I think that's what I was feeding him at the time. And here he hurt his leg. I thought he broke it. I took him to the vet. We take x-rays. The entire back leg, the entire bone was like rubber and looked like there was Swiss cheese in there. The whole bone was full of holes. And the doctor told me that what they were finding in their research, and this had not been put out to the public, but now I just recently actually upstairs on my computer, I had a whole story about animal vaccinations and links to all of these different studies that they've done. But what they'd been finding out, and mind you, this was in the early 90s, is that the three-year rabies vaccine was causing the sarcoma in the animals. And she told me that the reason why they no longer gave animals injections in the back of the neck like they used to, if you remember when you were a kid, they'd take your dog and they'd grab him by the scruff of the neck and they'd zip, 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 and they'd give him all the shots right in the back of the neck. Well, guess why they don't do that anymore? Because they were ending up with cancer. And when they were giving them the shots in the back of the neck, they were ending up with spine cancer. Well, hey, hate to tell you, but you can't amputate a spine. But she told me it was the adjuvant. It was the aluminum sulfate or whatever the aluminum, I think it is aluminum sulfate that they put into the vaccines. It was the three-year vaccine loaded with adjuvant that was causing the bone cancer. So she told me, if you want to stay safe, at least for the rabies vaccine, you get them the 1 year. And if you really want to stay safe, you do the live virus that they do intranasally, not injectable. So my poor cat, you know, we did surveys of the rest of his body and the cancer hadn't spread anywhere. And it was probably one of the most horrible decisions I ever had to make in my life. Here this cat is, healthier than a horse with all this bone cancer. Didn't spread anywhere. So we opted to amputate. And if you've ever had to make that decision for a living creature, I mean, putting an animal to sleep is one thing, and I've only had to do that twice in my life, and it was out of mercy. They were my little babies, and I mean, they just, the one had a stroke, and the other one was just, I mean, he was dying very badly. But if you ever had to actually make the decision for an animal who doesn't understand to have, like, one of their limbs cut off, and then have to help rehabilitate that animal. And I mean, they don't understand what happened. It was just, it was the most horrifying experience of my life up until that point. And that was caused by the vaccine. Now I'm telling you, so since the early 90s, I've been onto these assholes. I've paid so much attention to adjuvants. That's why the squalene, when the stories started coming out about the first Gulf War, I just got out of high school. And was actually, when the first Gulf War started, I was just got out of college. And all my friends from high school had gone over to the Gulf and had gotten that anthrax vaccine with the newfangled squalene in it. And a majority of my friends now have all kinds of health issues, ranging simply in the very beginning from what they were calling that Gulf War syndrome. Then the one where you're really tired. I never remember the name of it. They, you know, they were diagnosing everybody with that for a while. They're like, oh, chronic fatigue syndrome. Yes, we don't know why you're tired. Autoimmune diseases, infertility, adrenal fatigue. And then it started to affect their entire lives. I mean, it completely took them out. And trust me, from somebody who was diagnosed with quote unquote chronic fatigue syndrome and cancer probably 30 times. I mean, they couldn't, and then allergies and then autoimmune. And then, you know, I mean, I lived that life already. I lived it all. I can completely see, and I just won't give up. I am such a tenacious bitch. Trust me, you wouldn't want to live with me and you wouldn't want to piss me off. Actually, I mellow now in my old age. I usually just ignore people when they piss me off. But I mean, back in those days, wow, I was a whippersnapper. But you know, I lived that life and I blame it on being a pincushion. I blame it on not understanding the whole pharmaceutical industry. I trusted my doctors. And, you know, I had some really good doctors who really wanted to help me figure out what was wrong back in those days. But here's the problem. They never helped me treat the problem. All they did was give me more drugs or give me more vaccinations or give me more radiation or here, drink this big cup of radioactive iodine. Yes, they did. I mean, I lived that life. Nobody helped me. The only way that I helped myself was to figure out that there was a connection between the food and what was going into my body and what was happening. So anyway, all right, I'm not going to harp on that. We've done vaccines and biopharma and synthetic biology all week, and I want to change gears here a little bit. We were talking about food. I'd like to kind of switch back into there because I found a story the other day out of a publication that I've been reading for quite a number of years. Oh, at least since the late 80s, good old Scientific American. So, you know, I would read that publication and kind of listen to what it says. Well, I got to tell you, I posted this story out of there the other day on my Before the First Cup page, and in the post, in the title, I titled it, "What a Dumb Fucking Question." The title of the story is "Why People Oppose GMOs, Even Though Science Says They're Safe." What? Yes, that is a dumb fucking question. And you know what? I actually shared it off of Scientific American's page and put that statement in my share. So I'm hoping that someone at Scientific American went through to see who shared their stuff and saw my comments. All right, let's read this. Let's read this story out of a science, quote-unquote, science publication that now is questioning why us tinfoil hat-wearing lunatics don't believe what they're telling us. Now, if we remember, we have Tom Vilsack, is the head of the FDA, slid over his slimy ass from Monsanto attorney. Tom Vilsack. He is. He slid his ass over. Actually, wasn't he the mayor or the governor of Iowa as well, I think, at one point, which, of course, is where all the bird flu broke out. But he slid his ass over as Monsanto attorney and took over. Let's do this really quick. Tom Vilsack, I don't want to give you guys wrong information. Head of the USDA. Sorry. Excuse me. So he's the head of the USDA. Good old Tommy Vilsack. But who's the other dude that's the head of the FDA? They're all in bed. Trust me. They are all in bed. All right. So what they did was they rubber stamped GMO. They looked at it, and remember, we listened to that one clip that one time where Jeffrey Smith of the Institute for Responsible Technology was on talking about this very issue. Basically, they said, well, an apple is an apple, and a potato is a potato, and just because we flipped a few genes in it on and off, you know, hey, we flipped a gene that says the potatoes don't brown anymore. They don't bruise either, and neither do the apples, because little Johnny, now that he got his measles vaccine, little Johnny doesn't like when he opens up his package of apples at school and they're brown. So he just flipped a gene here or there. It's still an apple. Don't worry about it. It's safe. Yeah, but what we found out is that flipping a gene or two, I mean, we've read stories that your bad lifestyle choices, that alcohol you drank at 13 and the cigarette you smoked and, oh my God, the stress you lived through from the ages of 18 to 35 all damaged your genes, right? You're bad breeding stock now, according to the transhumanists and the futurists, because you made bad lifestyle choices. And don't worry about it. Once you're in the International Genomics Database, we'll be able to pick and choose who has the best traits. Oh, not only to terraform the planet and to create life on demand at the push of a button per the DARPA lady, but we'll be able to decide who will be allowed to reproduce. But if something as simple as stress wrecks your genome for next generations, you know, how does flipping a few switches on and off not change the safety or what that food is going to do once it gets into your body. And we've already found out from Dr. Huber with some of Monsanto's monster creations. Even though they said that GMO corn, alfalfa, they think that no, that doesn't affect the animal whatsoever. Dr. Huber has found evidence to the contrary. Not only does it get through to the animal, but it also passes through to the placenta. Any of that Roundup Ready corn causes some sort of antibacterial, antimicrobial. He said it's a very good antibiotic, glyphosate. It kills all the beneficial bacteria in the soil, in the animals, in the gut. And we know how important that is as well to not only your health, but to your nutrition and your nutritional absorption. But hey, Scientific American says that people who oppose GMOs are anti-science. Let's read this. Why people oppose GMOs, even though science says they are safe. Now, hey, wait, one more thing. It doesn't have anything to do with the FDA, like, producing fraudulent studies or anything now, could it? No, no. Doesn't have anything to do with us finding two or three cases over the last 25 or 30 years of the CDC lying through their freaking teeth and allowing something dangerous in the way of a vaccination or, oops, the remnants of our biowarfare program to get out and be tested on your children. No. Doesn't have anything to do with the fact that now the CDC is getting into quick DNA scans of our food. No! And it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that, hey, if a company wants to genetically modify an apple, it doesn't need any additional approval because an apple is an apple is an apple. All right. And wait, one last thing. Sorry, guys. It has nothing to do with the fact that GMOs are banned in almost every other fucking country around the world except here. No! We are the GMO-friendly country. All right, genetically modified organisms, more affectionately known as GMOs, have met with enormous public opposition over the past two decades. Many people believe that GMOs are bad for their health, even poisonous, and that they damage the environment. Well, this is in spite of overwhelming scientific evidence, yes, that you shouldn't fucking believe, that proves GMOs are safe to eat and that they bring environmental benefits by making agriculture more sustainable. Yeah, as we spray glyphosate all over the globe and they're finding it in fucking breast milk. And this just makes me so goddamn angry. In a mainstream, quote unquote, scientific publication that they are putting out fodder like this. I should write them a letter. I am so angry over this story. And what kills me is that in the picture that goes along with the story, there's a gentleman, it appears to be, I don't know, it could be a lady, no makeup, maybe a gentleman, that has their hands on some plants, looks like they're in a nice big greenhouse. They got nitrile green blue gloves on, a Tyvek suit, and a respirator as they have their hands on the leaves of whatever is growing there. So yeah, that makes me feel really safe. Like I want to be eating that food. Anyway, back to this story. Why is there such a discrepancy between what science tells us about GMOs and what people think? To be sure, some concerns such as herbicide resistance in weeds and involvement of multinationals are not without bias, but they are not specific to GMOs. They're not? Wait, herbicide resistant weeds? That's like my big concern about genetically modified corn that you're then spraying glyphosate all over that isn't going to kill it? Isn't that the BT corn? No, herbicide-resistant weeds are not my primary concern. Let's put that on the record. Hence, another question we need to answer is why these arguments become more salient in the context of GMOs. I, the author of the story, Stefan Blanc, I recently published a paper with a group of Belgian biotechnologists and philosophers from Ghent University, arguing that negative representations of GMOs are widespread and compelling because they are intuitively appealing. Oh, yes. They're just appealing to people. People like to jump on the negativity bandwagon, and that's why GMOs are bad. It's all in the mind, people. Remember, they now have determined that people who are paranoid about their food and want to eat safe and healthy food have a mental disorder. Back to the story. By tapping into intuitions and emotions that mostly work under the radar of conscious awareness, but are constituent of any normal functioning human mind, so yes, pulling on the heartstrings, such representations become easy to think. They capture our attention. They are easily processed and remembered, and thus stand a greater chance of being transmitted and becoming popular. Like, what a myth. Even if they are untrue. Yes, let's make sure we get the Google Truth algorithm out there to make sure we wipe out any negativity on the internet or questioning about not only the safety of GMOs, but how about the safety of nanotech vaccines? How about the safety of synthetic biology? Don't worry about it, because the people who know are in charge, and they're all here to keep you safe. I mean, hey, the DOD didn't mean to let hundreds of samples of live anthrax ship across the globe without killing them. You know, GlaxoSmithKline didn't want to pay out $63 million in this latest round for vaccines for the swine flu in 2009 that caused neurological damage. And that's all in your head, people. It's all in your head. Don't worry about it. Thus, many people oppose GMOs in part because it makes sense that they would pose a threat. So you know what? Let's just pass the DARC Act. Let's make sure that we do not have mandatory GMO labeling on our food. Let's also make sure that we get rid of the Country of Origin Act, because you don't need to know if you have Chinese chicken. Because God forbid, what is wrong with Chinese chicken? There's nothing wrong with Chinese chicken. Shut up and eat it. I mean, seriously, this, and you know, the reason why this gets my goat is because I am so picky about my food. I have been since I was a little kid. I like food. I like food when it's fresh and green. But I don't like mad science gone mad food, and I am not going to step up and get my 3D printed, nutritionally good for me food that has been mandated by a federal agency somewhere. All right, so it just makes sense that GMOs will pose a threat. So it's all in our head, people. It's all in our head. We're jumping on the bandwagon. We're bending to peer pressure because we read it on that pesky internet. All right. In the paper, back to the story, we identify several intuitions that may affect people's perception of GMOs. Psychological essentialism, for example, makes us think of DNA as an organism's essence. Psychological essentialism. An unobservable and immutable core that causes the organism's behavior and development and determines its identity. Now tell me if that does not sound like a total crock of psycho freaking babble. Psychological essentialism. I mean, I'm not thinking of DNA as an organism's essence. DNA is an organism's essence. And when you start flipping switches in the DNA, it changes the organism. Hello, Science 101, Genetics 101. We're spending bazillions on the genome project. You know they know that. As such, when a gene is transferred between two distantly related species, like, oh, I don't know, spider goats, roach tomatoes, what other crazy experiments have we read about? People are likely to believe that this process will cause characteristics typical of the source organisms to emerge in the recipient. For example, in an opinion survey in the United States, more than half of respondents said that a tomato modified with fish DNA would taste like fish, but of course it would not. Hey, I don't know about you. I don't eat fish, nor do I want to be eating fish tomatoes. Essentialism clearly plays a role in public attitudes towards GMOs. People, I mean, wait, what? So this dude seems to think it's okay, though, to put fish genes into a fucking tomato. Fish genes do not need to be in a tomato. Spider genes do not need to be in a goat. What did we read about the other day for growing transplant organs? Putting 5 human genes into a pig. This is absolute lunacy. And anyone who can sit here with a straight face and argue that it's all a psychological condition, that you don't like this shit, has a screw loose. I think after the show, I might even log in as myself and say, hey, asshole, you have a screw loose. I can't even believe this story. This story, I started reading this the other morning while I was upstairs. My family was up there, and wow, my blood pressure went so high, and I just started ranting. I'm like, you know what? I got to save the story for when I go on air. I will not put you in my crosshairs. All right. Anyway, essentialism clearly plays a role in public attitudes towards GMOs, and people are typically more opposed to GM applications that involve transfer of DNA between two species, quote-unquote transgenic, that within the same species, cisgenic. Now, what they don't mention is that they've been using transgenic vaccines for the longest time. I mean, we have SV40 monkey cancer cells we could trace way back in vaccines. Who the hell knows what they're putting in there now? We got cow, aborted fetus. I was looking at something the other day with ingredients. There's an entire list of ingredients in some of the most common vaccines, and it was very disturbing. Anti-GMO organizations, such as NGOs, exploit these intuitions by publishing images of tomatoes with fishtails. Yeah, because you know what? It's freaking funny, and it's true. No. Fishtails aren't true. But I mean, the American public is so dumbed down that if you try to explain to them what transgenic means, they're not going to get it. So you got to put it in pretty simple pictures. I learned that a long time ago in taking the concepts of adult education. Pretty pictures, simple, pretty pictures get the point across a lot faster than 10,000 pages of 8-point fonts. So yes, a tomato with a fishtail on it is a great way to get someone's attention to read more about it. But no, they're exploiting these essentialist intuitions, they say, by publishing images of tomatoes with fishtails, or by telling the public that companies modify corn with scorpion DNA to make crispier cereals. I've never heard of that one, but I really hope they're not doing that. Oh my God, scorpion barf. Can you say barf? I don't need any of that shit at all anymore. intuitions about purposes and intentions also have an impact on people's thinking about GMOs. They render us vulnerable to the idea that purely natural phenomenon exists or happens for a purpose that is intended by some agent. Well, no, I'm not some creationist lunatic either. But I do have to say that nature figured it out quite well on her own. And us deciding that we're going to bastardize everything that exists on this planet, putting insects, animals, and humans into a genome database, and being able to quote, create life at the push of a button on demand, unquote, per DARPA, is not a natural phenomenon. We are not gods. We don't deserve to be gods. We have no ethics and no morals in this realm, and it is the lunatics running the asylum. I know I don't want to be bagged and tagged at a cellular level. Thank you very much. It says they, us, the free thinkers, that at least question what's being jammed down our throats, they render us vulnerable to the idea that a purely natural phenomenon exists or happens for a purpose that is intended by some agent. But these assumptions are part and parcel of religious beliefs. Oh, well. But in the secular environment, they lead people to regard nature as a beneficial process or entity that secures our well-being and that humans should not meddle with it. Well, like I said, humans don't need to meddle with it. It's done fine on its own. The only reason it's messed up now is because we messed with it. And in the context of opposition to GMOs, genetic modification is deemed, quote unquote, unnatural. And biotechnologists are accused of, quote, playing God. Well, they must be listening to my show. The popular term, quote unquote, Frankenfood captures what is at stake by going against the will of nature in an act of hubris. Yes, that is exactly it. We are bound to bring enormous disaster upon ourselves. Well, damn you, conspiracy theorists. Damn you for even thinking that this could cause any type of disaster, how small-minded you are. Disgust also affects people's attitudes towards GMO. The emotion probably evolved, at least in part, as a pathogen avoidance mechanism, preventing the body from consuming or touching harmful substances. So don't worry, your disgust when you think about fish tomatoes has nothing to do with the fact that it's not safe. It's an evolutionary thing that kept you safe in the past from toxic or harmful substances, but these aren't toxic. Don't feel disgusted. Open your arms and bite the poison apple. It's the fall of man, people. Bite the poison apple. Don't bite the poison apple. I'm going to make a meme. I was saying in chat the other day, I actually had like a really good vision for a meme where someone is reaching out and grabbing for the, I even know the images I'm going to use in the background. I'm going to do an anti-GMO, anti-mad science meme and come up with some really good stuff to put on there. We feel repelled by things that possibly contain or indicate the presence of pathogens such as bodily fluids, rotten meats, and maggots. This would explain why disgust operates on a hair trigger. Yes, you people, you hair trigger lunatics, you're just working on some sort of passed down survival mechanism that shouldn't be triggered right now. It is better to forego an edible meal under the misguided assumption that it is contaminated than to consume sickening or even lethal food that is erroneously thought to be safe. Hence, disgust can be elicited by completely innocuous food, like, yes, GMOs. Can you even believe this story? I can't even believe that they put out such propaganda garbage like this in Scientific American. I am never going to read this publication in any way, shape, or form the same way. I bet this is paid. I bet this shill was paid to write this story. GMOs, and I mean paid nicely. Hit piece, and they probably paid Scientific American handsomely as well. GMOs probably triggered disgust because people view genetic modification as a contamination. The effect is enforced when the introduced DNA comes from a species that is generally deemed disgusting, such as rats or cockroaches. No! Like I said, cockroach tomatoes? Hey, who wouldn't want that in their salad? However, DNA is DNA, whatever its source. The impact of disgust explains why people feel more adverse towards GMOs than other GM applications, such as GM medicine. Yeah, well, because the GM medicine nobody quite understands yet, except for you, my listeners, because we've done lots of digging into that. But the general populace doesn't understand that the same exact technologies that Monsanto and Syngenta and all these other mad science food corporations, Nestle, I mean, we looked at that a while back. They're all genetically modifying their foods. They all have their own mad science labs. There is nobody in the FDA or the USDA or the CDC or any of these other regulatory agencies that are supposed to keep us safe that are sitting there doing long-term studies to see what the effect is going to be on you, me, and our kids. Nobody. Rubber stamp it. It's fine. A tomato is a tomato. An apple is an apple. A potato is a potato. Eat it and like it. And by the way, there's no label. Because, hey, it hurts sales. If people knew it was GMO, it's going to hurt our sales. I bet you anything that this story was put out as a hit piece because they're pushing that TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, where it's going to be anybody's anything, no labels anywhere, and eat it or like it or you're going to starve. The impact of disgust explains why more people feel adverse towards GM foods than other GM applications, such as GM medicine. And once disgust is elicited, the argument that GMOs cause cancer or sterility, no, the pictures of the rats with the grapefruit-sized tumors have nothing to do with that. The studies on the glyphosate and the cytochrome P450 enzyme, no, they have nothing to do with that. Once disgust is elicited and the argument that GMOs cause cancer or sterility or that they will contaminate the environment, yeah, those pesky organic farmers, becomes very convincing. And it's often used by those tinfoil hat-wearing lunatics who say that GMOs aren't safe. Disgust also affects your moral judgments, leading people to condemn everyone who is involved with the development and commercialization of GM products. Yeah, I mean, they're good people looking out for you and me, good old Billy Gates, and all the other billionaires that are investing in this to contaminate the entire world. Yeah, they're looking out for you and me, and it's only your moral judgment that makes them look bad. They're trying to do what's right for the world. Because people have no conscious access to the emotional source of their judgments, they consequently look for arguments to rationalize them. Seriously, this article is making my stomach feel upset. Our cognitive analysis is not intended to debunk every anti-GMO claim a priori. A particular GM application may have unintended effects, which can also be the case with the product of organic or conventional farming. Really? I mean, we made a pumpelcumber once, but that didn't like ruin the environment. My daughter was experimenting with manual pollination last year in the greenhouse with a little tiny paintbrush, and she took a pollen out of the flower of a cucumber and put it into a pumpkin and vice versa. And we ended up with a whole crop of what we deemed pumpelcumbers. And they didn't taste too well, too good either. The cucumbers had mega seeds in them. And they were as hard as pumpkin seeds, so it didn't work out too well. But, I mean, that does not, though, ruin the environment or cause long-term effects in the DNA. I have fine cucumbers and pumpkins this year. The risks and benefits should be assessed on a case-by-case basis, regardless of the process. So GMOs are no different than conventional and organic farming, and they all should be assessed on a case-by-case basis. Well, that's not being done. Current applications have been proven to be safe, and one may take issue with the involvement of multinationals or be concerned about the herbicide resistance. But these issues have to do with how GM technology is sometimes applied and certainly do not warrant resistance to the technology or to GMOs in general. Do not resist, people. Assimilation is coming and resistance is futile. Remember, the emotional and intuitive basis of anti-GMO sentiments, however, prevents these people from making these distinctions. I really want to, like, go after this guy. The impact of institutions and emotions on people's understanding and attitudes towards GMOs has an important implication for science education and communication. And because the mind is prone to distorting or rejecting scientific information in favor of more intuitive beliefs, simply transmitting the facts will not necessarily persuade people of the safety or benefits of GMO, especially if people have been subjected to emotive anti-GMO propaganda on that pesky internet. Lies, I tell you. That internet is full of lies. Oh, my God. Can you believe this? Don't question anything. Don't ask for long-term studies. And even when you get the studies, hey, don't question how many of those studies are fraudulent. Because you know what? We're telling you what to believe. And the only reason why you don't believe us now is because you have this emotional disorder, apparently. In the long run, education, starting from a young age. Yes, let's groom your children with propaganda early in schools. And I've already seen a Monsanto coloring book for kids. In the long run, education, starting from a young age and specifically targeted at tackling common misconceptions, might, oh, keyword, immunize the population against unsubstantiated anti-GMO messages. Other concerns can be addressed and discussed in the wider context of agricultural practices and the place of science and technology in society. However, for now, the best way to turn the tide and generate a more public, positive response to GMOs is to play into people's intuition as well. For instance, emphasizing the benefits of current and future GM applications, improve soil structures because herbicide-resistant crops require less or no tilling, higher incomes for farmers in developing countries, yes, not the ones that commit suicide en masse, reduced vitamin A deficiency because, hey, the glyphosate is chelating out all of your essential nutrients, so we'll have to then put the nutrients back in by inserting some sort of Frankenstein genes. Reduced vitamin A deficiency, virus and drought resistance. Yes, because, hey, we have all these orchestrated droughts going on all over the world where food won't grow. So we need to use drought-resistant seed, to name a few. But it might constitute the most effective approach to changing people's minds. Show them the benefits. Show them how fucked up the world is and how this is going to save the planet. And given the benefits and the promises of GM technology, such a change is much needed. Dum, 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 dum. I just, guys, I couldn't even believe just how unbelievable that story was. But hey, you know what? The same sorts of technologies that are creating genetically modified foods are allowing scientists to also create new flu viruses that can wipe out all of humanity. Yes. One little flip of a switch and whoops, we aren't very good at following rules or containing organisms because people tend to be lazy in general. So when you work at a biosafety lab with a low level 2 biosafety rating and you're creating genetically modifying and manipulating flu viruses that can wipe out 90% of the whole population on planet Earth. Hey, what does it matter? It says working at a lab with relatively low level 2 biosafety rating, University of Wisconsin-Madison professor Yoshihiro Kawaoka has created a strain of flu that can completely escape the human immune system. The new genetically engineered virus is based on the good old H1N1, yeah, the swine flu, which killed around 500,000 people just 5 years ago, apparently. The pandemic that wasn't a pandemic. Kawaoka wanted to convert the H1N1 into its pre-pandemic state to analyze the genetic changes that were involved. And he told The Independent that he has now finished his study and will submit his findings to a scientific journal. He also told the newspaper that his experiment was to monitor the changes to the H1N1 strain that would, what? Oh, improve the vaccines that use good old DNA, RNA, and genetic modification. The venue for his research was the Institute for Influenza Virus Research in Madison. The institute has a level three agriculture biosafety rating, one level beneath the institutes that carry out the Ebola research. However, his research was carried out at a level 2 biosafety lab. And the university claims that there was absolutely no risk of escape from the lab. But don't worry about it, people, because coming to a suite near you, if I can get this to load, somebody dropped me this story the other day out of faux.org, and this one may not load. There's a new vanilla on the market. And it is titled Symbio Vanilla. A new ingredient straight out of a petri dish has entered the global food supply in many of our favorite foods, from ice cream to birthday cake. And like many of the products of genetic engineering, it won't be labeled. And instead, it's being marketed as natural. Oh, yes, it is. But this ingredient is anything but natural. Synthetic biology vanilla flavoring Symbio Vanilla is produced with a new Synthetic biology vanilla flavoring is produced with a new virtually unregulated experimental genetic technology called synthetic biology. Yes, and we discovered that all of our federal agencies are involved in synthetic biology now, which is an extreme version of genetic engineering where they can reproduce themselves. Symbio Vanilla was designed to replace the natural vanillin flavoring from vanilla beans and is made in labs using synthetic DNA and reprogrammed genetically engineered yeast. This is the first major use of a Symbio ingredient in food. And dozens of other flavors and food additives are in the pipeline. Of course they are. So Symbio Vanilla sets a dangerous precedent for synthetically, genetically engineered ingredients to sneak into our food and be labeled as natural. ice cream companies are one of the biggest purchasers of natural vanilla, and we need your help to send them some strong messages. Synthetic biology vanillin poses several health, human health, environmental, and economic concerns for consumers, food company, and stakeholders. It could speed the rainforest destruction and could harm sustainable farmers and poor communities across the world. And I mean, and what happens once it's in your body? Who the hell knows? Because hey, guess what? It's newfangled and there's no long-term research. I want to get to one other quick story. Actually, there were probably about eight of them, but I guess we're going to have to end up here and we'll start back here on Monday. There was an interview from last week that we aired from Unlock the Door with Michael Cross, and his guest was Zoltan Istvan. Zoltan Istvan is a self-proclaimed transhumanist. I was going to air a little bit of that interview here, but I've run out of time apparently. But Zoltan Istvan has now created his own political party called the Transhumanist Party. You want to live forever? Vote for me is his tagline. Yes, the transhumanists now are planning on taking over. I want to mention, too, before the show's over, and we'll start here on Monday with transhumanism. There is a brand new show that is going to be airing beginning Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern from 8 to 10. It is a technology show with a twist. It is called Sovereign Tech. And Sovereign Tech is a friend of Nathan from Live Free FM. He is an anarchist. And I actually listened to the show that's going to air this weekend. You guys are going to love it because it sure as hell sounds like Sovereign Tech and myself are on the same page. He talks about Google, transhumanism, and Amazon drones. All right, guys, make sure you stick around because it is Friday night.